You're listening to the Ice Warrior Podcast. Ice Warrior Podcast, Episode 3. My name is Gunnar Stern, once again. I'm your host, and with me, again, is my beautiful fiancé, Macy.
Hey guys, what's up?
So, you believe it, we're on our third episode. Probably should be on our fourth episode, but we...
had some issues last week. For some reason, it wouldn't work. I don't know why it would.
Right, and it was just a really busy week.
Yeah, it was. Barely had time.
It is just really busy with getting ready, you know, coming back from Eagle and getting ready for Wausau, the quick turnaround there, with a little bit of traveling and just, you know, my spending a lot of time in the race shop working on sleds. It's hard to find a time to do these, but
we are here
and we're gonna go through 2 weeks of racing, and we're gonna catch up all on all that, and it should be a pretty involved podcast. We're gonna be talking about a lot of stuff what went on. So let's kind of get back into the podcast in itself. You know, you guys have been telling us, you know, that you've been listening. I've had many people tell us, you know, how awesome of a job we're doing, and you guys really appreciate, you know, us talking about this, our race team, and talking about ice oval racing, and everybody thinks it's an awesome idea just to get a little bit more
coverage, or, you know, marketing. And from that perspective, you can find us on, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. What's the other one?
I'm still working on some other ones to get on, like the Amazon podcast system and the iHeartRadio podcast system, to kind of have some stuff to go through to get available on those. But pretty much almost everybody listens on the
Buzzsprout link.
Yeah, on the actual link. And then some people do listen on Spotify too. I had actually some people like actually ask me what Spotify was before trying to listen to the podcast. So it was kind of funny. It was an older gentleman didn't really know what Spotify was, but now he knows, so that's cool. Yeah, and we've had, you know, like almost 800 total downloads from the past two episodes, which is quite a few.
It's interesting to see too, like the locations. I feel like a lot of the individuals who are listening to the podcast, I mean, are from the racing community, but then you look at the other, you know, handful of them, and they're probably pretty new to the sport. I mean, they saw, you know, a link to this, or their buddy recommended it or shared it on Facebook. It's not just in a certain, you know, group that can only view it or listen to it or whatever. So that's also interesting to see how far we're reaching out to, you know, those people who aren't directly involved with the sport itself.
For sure. Some of them were even from, there was one from Japan was listening, and there was someone from Germany that was listening. Pretty sure there's not ice hole racing in those countries, but it's pretty cool that someone, or maybe something, I don't know if it's like a robot, but I don't think so, but it's just cool that, you know, our podcast is getting out there and people are seeing it, and it, hopefully, like you said, people are learning about the sport that maybe had no idea what this sport even was, so that's really cool in itself. So, yeah, thank you guys for listening. Next thing we kind of want to get into that I've been doing with every, I'm going to start doing with every podcast, is just highlighting one of our sponsors, our team sponsors, just to give them a little bit more recognition, especially this year with it being a shortened season and a lot of the COVID restrictions that are going on. We don't get to kind of do our part as the team to recognize some of our sponsors. So this week I wanted to recognize one of our main sponsors that has been with us for 2 years now, and that's Aqua Finance. And they are a finance company out of Wausau.
Yep, they're a third-party finance company out of Wausau, so they partner a lot with different companies, whether that being, you know, home improvement, water treatment system, recreation, so boats, RVs, power sports. So what basically third-party means is that this is your, you know, dealership. If you were to go, or if you were to go to a dealership, buy something, they would recommend you go through Aqua Finance for their financing. So if you own a business and need another lender to go through or send your applications to, Aqua Finance is a perfect company for that, and they service all across the U.S. They're growing tremendously, so it's always good to recognize those, you know, businesses that start out in just Wausau or, you know, smaller towns in Wisconsin. So pretty cool to see.
Perfectly said. Yeah, and just knowing about them and their outreach in the Wausau community, they honestly, just from spending as much time as I do, which is not a lot, but I do see them just, you know, providing support in so many different aspects of the community, and especially in the racing community. I know they sponsor a team that races in the super late class in the summer, and I think they do sponsor some other, you know,
smaller, younger teams
and racers. And it's just pretty cool because it seems like they have a racing kind of like background and pedigree that, you know, they're putting their money back into the community and the racing community. So that's always
for the kids too. So that's always good to see as well.
Right. And it's just nice seeing them, you know, just kind of push back into their community. So I'd just like to recognize those guys over there at Aqua. And they've been helping us out past couple years now. I love giving them recaps on how well we're doing. They're always super stoked on when I get to tell them how we're doing. So it's pretty cool getting to partner with them for the past few years. And hopefully we continue to build on that for the next couple years and that we're racing.
Yep, well said. So next we're moving into Eagle River. So Eagle River was not this past weekend, but the weekend before. And that was 3 days of racing. So Gunnar, are you going to share your results?
Yeah, we can just kind of start with the beginning. Eagle River is always a super long weekend. It's always, you get there like on a Wednesday or Tuesday even sometimes. Usually the first day is all tech. This year tech went pretty smooth. It was nothing too fancy. You know, they kind of just tore down the heads of the motors, looked at a cylinder, and that was pretty much the extent of it. It was pretty much protocol that we've done in past years. So I kind of have mixed feelings on that. I wish they did do tech a little bit better. I mean, I wish they did more post-tech than they did pre-tech. I think, you know, the pre-tech, from a fairness point of view, anybody can pass pre-tech. But, I mean, they do try and seal the motors.
There's always
after
that,
pre-tech.
There's always that joke that, but someone has the same nail polish
right,
and can match the seal. But
and, like, it's, in all honesty, it's like it could happen. And, like, I don't know what goes on with other teams. And it just doesn't give you a good, easy feeling. And I get that people that are putting on tech are doing tech all weekend long. And, like, when it comes to Sunday after the champ race, after the final, it's like you don't want to do tech anymore. But honestly, it's almost the most important time to do it for, like, the future, right? Like, the final, the big race, the world championship. That's when the tech should be, like, the most, like, stringent. So
yeah, I always thought it was weird coming into it. You know, I think we got tore down two or three times last year completely after, like, a Saturday race. And then Sunday, there wasn't, like, anything. And they just checked, like, carbides and studs. And then, you know, looked and see if the seal was still there and weighed the sled and said, okay, fine. Yeah, fine.
Right.
So that was kind of interesting. And I do understand. I mean, you got to put everything back together, you know. But
It does take a lot of time to do that, for sure. But that comes with the cost of racing stock motors. We are now racing, yeah, like, all these motors should be exactly the same. And now we have to do tech. Like, That is, you know, a reaction from switching from mod motors to stock motors. In mod motors, we didn't have to do all this. It was open. Rulebook was open. So now
it's a change, definitely. People aren't used to it, I don't think. And I think that people need to get used to it, or not need to. I don't want to say it that way. That sounds a little harsh. But I think that there's a change, and it's like people don't want to step on people's toes because they're still, you know, questioning, like, what are we supposed to be actually looking at, or what are we supposed to be doing with this? Like, the rules are constantly changing, I feel like, too. They're adding, like, you know, clauses in those rules.
Yeah, I think that it's hard when you don't have as many racers, and when you are not, when you're teching too much, it can cause people to kind of stray away from the sport because it is like a lot of work to tech, but you also have to keep it fair. So it's hard to find that fair balance of too much tech and not enough tech. I just wish that we would do a little bit more. I'm just asking for a little bit more post-tech. The pre-tech I thought went pretty well, you know. I think, you know, that was good enough. So
one thing that I learned, I guess, after tech from Eagle River, the guys didn't say that. I think it was the Sioux that they do, you know, drug testing, and they make you do a breathalyzer test or something like that in the morning. And I thought that was kind of interesting because I was like, oh, you know, you think of professional athletes, you think of football, you think of basketball, and I'm sure they have to do that all the time. But for racing, it was just kind of weird for me. But if you think about it, you're going, you know, 100 plus sometimes down back straightaways, and, you know, other drivers' lives are also in your hands. So I guess it's looking at it from that perspective, you know, they definitely could be doing that if they wanted to be. I mean, that's another, you know, high costs or high, it's going to push people away from the sport. But that was very interesting to hear that they do that, that aspect of it.
Yeah, this seems like the Sioux is a little bit more strict with who gets the race and how they get the race. They kind of control the rookie class. They don't allow anybody just to come in there and race, which is it's different. It makes it harder for a newcomer to come race, but I see the point of why they do it that way. I mean, I'm all about it. I would definitely. I'm open to doing drug testing, breathalyzer testing. It's only a positive for me. So if that's what I don't think it's a big issue, honestly, just knowing the other racers and drivers. I mean, I can't think of really anybody that would really maybe not pass in a breathalyzer test. Maybe like if you had a hard night out or something, but that really, it shouldn't have to come to that. But I mean, I'm okay with it. So. So moving on to Thursday was testing on a limited track, very short track all the way on the inside.
Felt like we were racing kitty cats.
Yeah, I mean, I get why we did it. Saving ice. Ice was an issue from before we even showed up. Everybody knew it. So, I mean, I'm not blaming anybody. It is what it was. There was not much time to make ice this year, so we had to deal with what we had. I maybe would have just maybe let everybody go out one time, but just push everybody away on the outside and save that like middle, the inside groove, and just put the cones way out and let everybody at least do one or two times out. Because what we did out there on like the very inside of the track with like staying inside the cones was almost like not even like was almost useless. But I mean, it was like just to see if the sled even just ran for the champ guys. I mean,
it wasn't anything for handling, and I feel like that's key at that track.
Right. You know? So I would have rather gotten one or two laps all the way to the outside by the bales. At least you can see your speeds, RPM, you know, see like a little bit more data crunching stuff that you can actually use than what we did. But I get the point of what we did, so I'm not really complaining about that. It made qualifying definitely interesting. So
everyone was practicing,
right? So the qualifying was like a practice session, really.
One of notes from a previous year, if you had, you know, a good chunk of them.
Right. So that's kind of what we based on. We're going off our notes, and we ended up being third fastest in qualifying. Sled felt decent enough. I know we were slower than last year with our two lap time by like half a second. I think everybody was slower though, so it was pretty comparable throughout the field. So, I mean, I think that went well for us being third. I think we at the end of the weekend, we definitely had definitely way faster than third, probably the fastest sled, I think, overall. But,
yeah, and I think it was for qualifying, I think it was 102.39, 220.28, and then I think Brent Miller finished the top five. So, 311, which was kind of surprising. We had fast time there too, which is always good to see, you know, different numbers or different people up there. So it was also interesting to not have like the Canadian race teams, because there's always, you know, a good chunk of them are, you know, always in contingent or, you know, fighting for those top five spots as far as qualifying goes, or top 10. So that was also weird to not see, you know, Sabrina or Travis or Colt or whoever else, you know, didn't make it down.
Yeah. I remember when I was getting into trying to qualify, like actually trying to make it into the Sweet 16 when I was a little bit younger, like it was stacked, like the fields. It was like you had to be like within a second or a second and a half of the leader to make it into the Sweet 16. So, I mean, the field was a little bit watered down this year, but that's just from COVID and, you know, like you said, the Canadian racers not being there. So,
it was also a weird track too, you know, like you said, there was not much ice and I think it was a little rough too. So that's like why I think times were down a little bit as well. It was a different track than most people are used to running on.
Yeah, times are down because of lack of practice, rougher track, lack of ice. So, yeah, it's kind of all compared. But that made things interesting.
Yeah, it did, definitely. And being the first race of the season also, I mean, played a role in that as well. So, so moving into then Friday Night Thunder, qualifying was in the morning Friday. Moved into Friday Night Thunder. Woody's had their Sweet 16 Challenge 1v1 knocked down showdown thing, whatever they wanted to call it. Gunnar, thoughts on that from your perspective, I guess. I think it was you had 8 and 8 because Star was 16. Mm-hmm. Top four from those two heats moved into the 1v1s. And then you drew out of a hat to see who you got to race against. So everything was completely random. It wasn't off of qualifying at all. It was just completely random. You know, if you got to race against Matt Bennett, if you got to race against Tom Olsen or whoever it was all random and based out of whatever card you got out of that hat. So that was kind of interesting.
Right. So the first, so I won the round of the first round. So the five lap heat.
Yeah, there was eight racers in that.
Yeah.
I believe.
So I won that, and
it was pretty actually interesting. That was a good heat. Matt Bennett like just came out of nowhere. I felt like he was like flying. It was actually good to see him up there. I think he got second in that, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Came out with a bang. It was good to see. So you got first in that one.
Yeah, and so then I got to pick out of a hat who I'd be racing next. And I picked Orange, and Orange was the first person to go up to the line. So Orange, there were chips. You picked out of a hat chips. There's orange chips and black chips. So I picked an orange chip, which means I got to go up to the line and pick my position first for the next heat against Matt Bennett.
Yep, Matt Bennett. You and Matt Bennett
right.
Paired up against each other.
Yep.
Which was all random.
Yeah, it was completely random. So
even though you got first and Matt got second in the original one, you still had to go against
each other. Yeah, right. So that's kind of how that worked out. So it was random. It was kind of just how he picked the next chip.
And he got the black chip.
The black chip of the same number, I believe, is what it was.
Okay.
So then I won that against Matt, and then I picked, since I won, I got to pick the next chip, and I picked another orange chip, and I raced against Stevenson, right?
Yep, Blaine.
Right, so I was the first to pick on the line, so then I went up and I picked my spot on the line. And then I won that 1v1 against him. And then after
I think the other semi was Gady versus Olsen. And then Olsen won that one. So then you went up against Olsen.
Right.
So that's kind of how that like played out, if you guys are picturing that somewhere in your head.
Right. So then in the next, so for the final against me and Olsen, he got the pick out of the hat. So like I then... I'm pretty sure he picked
the orange.
So he got to pick. He got to go up to the line first. And
you didn't even pick a chip, right?
No, since there's only one left.
There's only one left. Right. It's gonna be black.
Yeah. Yep. So then since it was my first time being black, I didn't know what to expect and what the actual rules were. So then I asked, you know, the officials what I actually could do on the starting line, and that was either, you know, did I have to pull up to the outside or could I pull up on the inside or outside of Olson? And they said I could pull up wherever I wanted. So that's
Matt Gaetz also said that when he went against Olson, he got the black chip, and the Woody's guys came in the trailer and explained that to him as well. Okay. When he got the black chip.
Yeah. So that was made clear to me before the race even happened, like well before that race happened.
Yep.
So what happened there on the front stretch was just a big miscommunication, honestly, between the flagman and the officials and the actual rules and, you know, whoever was racing. So just kind of wanted to clear that up.
The race director's call.
Right.
And they did say they did agree with Woody's that, you know, there was a lack of communication prior to that, but Woody's was putting out the money, and that's what they said long before the race even happened. Like any other race, I mean, you start a final, the first person gets to pick where they go and where does the second person go, inside or outside of that person.
Right. I kind of get, like, the whole miscommunication, and I maybe would have been upset too, but at the end of the day, like, the race official does have a lot of power, and that is said at the driver's meeting. Like, the race official does get to make final calls on many things, and that's just kind of the way it went down, so...
And a lot of people were also confused, I think, like, on the Hill, because they didn't really explain that to them. It was not based off qualifying times at all. So, you know, it's not based off, you know, if you got third or if you got fifth or whatever you did. That was, and nothing to do with it. It was all random. You drew out of a hat. So, it, like, if you would have got first, you would have had to pick, and Tom got inside or outside of where you got or whatever, however that worked. It wasn't like, you know, you didn't deserve it based on your qualifying time. It was all random.
Right. Exactly. It was extremely random.
So, honestly, if you think about it, like, if you would have got the black chips in the first two rounds, you know, would you have liked that more? Because you got to pick inside or outside of that person.
It kind of is an advantage. Unless you want to go all the way to the inside. There comes a point where you line up too close to the inside, that second person's not want to go to the inside, because then they don't have that optimal line to take into the first corner. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of where experience comes into play when you're picking your spot on the line when you're like a first qualifier, is picking that spot that you can not cut somebody off going into the corner, but have that advantage with having the optimal line going into the corner. So
you don't have to cut up or cut down. You kind of just get to go straight up.
Right, and since you have that line, it makes it harder for the other person to have to turn right to then go left if they're starting inside of you. So it is just kind of like a little bit of a strategic maneuver there at the beginning of the race when you're picking spots on the line. It's kind of makes it interesting. But overall, I thought the whole new format of this Friday Night Thunder was different. It wasn't our typical 16 lap race, you know, Friday Night Thunder style, but it was, as a racing perspective or a racer perspective, I thought it was like extremely, it was, like, really tense the whole evening.
I feel like the guys got the sled back to the trailer, took the hood off, and they're already like, shoot, we got to put the hood back on and run back out to the track.
Yeah, that's what I'm
like,
talking
we
about.
We got to be up. Like, I saw some of the teams were making changes in the pits. They didn't have time to run all the way back to the trailer. And I know, like, some of the guys were, like, pull on, like, you know, cross-country racing out there. They were running with the sled so fast. So, and from a fan's perspective, I know everyone, like, wanted to see, you know, the typical Friday Night Thunder race, which they always see. But I don't think from, like, you know, advertising it well, I don't think individuals understood that, like, this is what was going to happen before, you know, the race even started. So they came there expecting it. And I think that's where the confusion kind of laid as far as that went. But from, like, my perspective, that, like, three laps was so intense. Like, it was just, like, crazy. You know, it wasn't, like, one person, like, leading the whole 15, you know. It was, like, in between two people. And it was just, like, you don't have to worry about any other driver out there. It was just two people. So, that was kind of cool to see. But, I don't know. Those are my opinions. Those are my thoughts, I guess, as far as that goes. I mean, I would have loved to see, you know, final out there with all 10 guys, but
hey, it's something different. I think the sport needs to try different things, and
props to Woody's for trying to do something different.
Honestly,
that's what the sport needs.
Woody's is literally one, if not the most supportive sponsor that ISOL has. Like, for all the years I've been racing, especially the past couple of years, Woody's has done so much, like more than a lot of other sports or sponsors have done for our sport, whether it was with, you know, a little bit more contingencies for the winners after finals and, you know, stuff like that. And it's just, they're extremely supportive, and for them to try and want to do something that's different. And, you know, their Woody's Challenge has a lot of history for them, and for them to bring it to the World Championship for the Friday Night Thunder. Because they don't just do, that wasn't a brand new thing. The Woody's Challenge is an event that they do in snowcross, and they also do in the enduro before the Sioux. So for them to bring that to the World Championship, it's, you know, you have to give them just, you can't bag on them too much, honestly, because it's they are supporting our sport a lot. And I think just,
the sport wouldn't be where it was without a sponsor, so.
Right. So I think, you know, it can be tweaked for the future. You know, I don't know if it's the answer, going back to the 16 lap final, you know, if that was better, or if we try something else next year, who knows? I think just trying something different is a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of all I have to say about that. But, you know, being the winner, Friday Night Thunder winner, that was awesome.
You got to be very consistent. You know, you win.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you could, you know, get a second or get a third and then still make it in the final and then maybe win that.
Right. You have to win to move on. So that was kind of like the NASCAR playoffs. You have to win. If you win, you move on. Like, if you win again, you move on. So that was kind of cool. And just getting the pole on Sunday, like, you don't really know how much that means until, like, you actually get to, like, not have to race on Saturday. And it is a weird feeling not racing on Saturday.
I feel like this year it kind of like was like nice because your equipment was not beat up because that track was so bad on Saturday, I feel like, as far as that goes. So, you know, your equipment got a little bit of a breather. They didn't have to run so hard that sled. So
yeah, not running this year on Saturday was definitely easier on the equipment for a year that was extremely harsh on equipment. We'll get into that a little bit later on how much damage was done to our sleds coming back from Eagle.
So then moving into Saturday, Gunnar didn't race, but they still did the WC, you know, final, their semifinal, or quarterfinal semifinals. And then they determined the top 10 from there, and then they have the LCQ on Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm. I had F3 on Saturday.
Oh yeah, you did have F3.
I had a heat race.
You had a heat race for the final that was on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty interesting. To only have one, you know, one little five lap. I think it was five lap heat or three lap. One of the two. I don't even remember. If they cut it down or not? But
they cut them down to like five or something. Yeah, seven maybe.
The final was seven.
I probably should know since I was announcing during it, but I don't remember.
No, I'm talking about F3.
Oh, the F3? Yeah, was cut down to like five.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. And then actually the one thing that like I saw that kind of like stood out was there are some younger racers who kind of, you know, were getting seconds and thirds in those quarterfinals or semifinals that were kind of surprising to me. You know, not having much experience in the actual champ class, but seeing them, you know, run pretty good in Pro Light. So I think even Griffin Lee Pack got like a second. I think it was Blaine and Griffin, and I don't remember who was third and fourth in that one quarterfinal, but that was pretty awesome to see, you know, some of the younger guys doing better.
That's kind of like what comes out of this year with not, like, Canadian racers not being here, is it gives a place for younger racers to step up and give them a little bit more experience racing, you know, the faster guys, and that's what happened.
And from a driver's perspective, Gunnar, do you feel that, like, getting more seat time, like, is truly helping, you know, some of these Pro Light guys that are stepping up to the plate? You know, more experience, more seat time, more...
It's more seat time racing against better competition.
Yeah.
Because when you really get beat by really good competition, and like, that's when you really make yourself want to do better,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, seat time, there's different types of seat time. There's seat time in practice, seat time when you're just out there cruising around beating everybody, and there's seat time when you're getting beat, you know, getting your ass beaten, and then like you're wanting to do better. So you're out there learning, trying to make yourself better, you know, paying attention to things that are gonna make yourself race better, make the sled better. So that's kind of what this whole, I mean, this whole year is kind of an opportunity for those younger racers to kind of take advantage of, you mm-hmm. know, something like that.
Racing against, you know, the top guys in the sport. So I know you mentioned that you didn't really even want to do like pro light. You just kind of straight up went to champ because of the fact that you felt that you would rather race against, you know, the best of the best than, you know, win possibly those pro light class or whatever that may be, you know, even if you don't get in the WC or you don't, you get through barely in the LCQ or whatever it may be, finishing, you know, getting lapped a few times or whatever that may be, you still felt or feel like that was beneficial to you, correct?
Yeah. I tried qualifying for the WC like four or five times, I think, before I even made it. And I really got hard, like, down on myself for not making it those times, but I would rather have been doing that, trying to qualify for the WC, getting beat pretty badly, like, you know, just by not knowing how to race fast and well, than racing in the pro light or semi-pro champ class mm-hmm. and, like, just, you know, winning or getting seconds and, like, getting trophies. Yeah. For me, it was always I wanted to race in the champ class, even, like, from, like, from juniors. Like, I didn't spend much time in the semi-pro champ class. I spent maybe half a year or a year, and I just wanted to race in the champ class because that was where the show was. Like, at the time, that was kind of when TLR Cup was kind of taking off a little bit, and you were doing the, you know, getting to be on the stage for the introductions, and, like, that was, like,
the coolest.
Yeah, like, that's where I wanted to be. I wanted, even if I was starting in the back row, getting, you know, second to last, that was still way more beneficial to me than actually, like, doing well in a semi-pro champ or even racing, like, a different class, like an F500 or something. You know, that's just my mentality on racing. So it's I don't know, I see that it'll be a little bit different in other people, but, you know, to each their own. You know, it's you can't make someone want to race a class, but I think the class structure can be better suited for that type of, you know, growth throughout the classes, mm-hmm. Which we'll talk about that a little bit later. But moving on to Sunday, we got the Formula 3 World Championship, which was pretty awesome in the fact that
That thing was
super fast. It was handling awesome on a really crappy track.
Which is surprising for that sled.
For that sled to handle that well, and, like, for what we had to go through with last year, especially at the end of last year, where I felt like we were going backwards with it. But I really think, like, we're making some strides with that thing. And we're still working on some things. Like, it's not perfect, but where we make gains in other places, we kind of lose in other places. But I feel like we're actually learning about the sled, which is good.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think, you know, it was kind of weird, too, because I think it was, like, the Skidoo sleds, those 600Rs, is way more than the Polaris ones for some weird reason last year. Was that was a thing, right?
There is an initial weight of a Skidoo is more than the Polaris.
So that was also kind of weird to try to adjust that as well. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. And then moving into Pro Champ, the WC Pro Champ final.
We got third place. Definitely not where I wanted to be. Still, you know, walking away without a win there is a little bit of a disappointment. But I didn't really know what to expect going into it. I kind of knew, you know, the carbides were obviously going to fall off. They fell off more than I probably would have liked them, but, you know, more than I even would have thought. And just racing on that track.
And it was also weird.
And finishing the race is a little bit of an accomplishment. So, I mean,
practice or hot laps or, like, anything at all. So you just, like, full on just went out there for 25 laps.
Right.
Like, oh, have fun. The track conditions are probably not ideal at all right now.
I mean, everybody has to race against them. Everybody has the same track conditions. Mm-hmm. I feel like looking back at the race, I probably would have set up our sled a little bit different to help us turn when the carbides were, you know, when you lose your carbide. So that's something to look at towards the future, you know, something to learn from that. I think overall it was a pretty good weekend. You can't complain. Winning Friday at Thunder, Formula 3 World Championship, and a top three in the Pro Champ World Championship. It's a pretty decent weekend, honestly. I can't ask, you know, for much better. I've definitely had a lot worse weekends at the World Championship with, like, multiple DNFs. So to not DNF is definitely a step in the right direction, too. So moving on to this past weekend in Wausau. Oh, no, I kind of wanted to talk about what me I thought could be changed for next year with the World Championship.
Okay.
I think, look, you know, thinking about things that we can change, honestly, I just kind of thought about this, but I thought, like, the 10-lap break and then the 20-lapper, I thought that was more exciting racing, just looking at it, like, from an outsider perspective. Like, how many times did we see racing at the end of the race, at the end of the race?
Was it 20 first or 10 first?
It was 10 and then a 20. A 10 is a 10 lap, like a little 10 lap.
Was that like 3 or 4 years ago? When was the last time you stopped that?
I think it was like 4 years ago that we stopped doing it.
Yep.
And I just remember a lot of those races came down to like the end. Like the Nick Van Schrenning, Matt Schultz was one of those 10 lap, 20 lap breaks. Like that was extremely close. The one,
and then lap traffic was also like not a huge factor.
It mean a little bit.
I mean, it was a little bit, but it wasn't like, you know, huge factor where some of these races. It's a huge factor.
For me, yeah. For me, it bunches the group back up. It kind of gives everybody a break, and it also gives people a chance to
actually finish the race.
To do better, right? To like you said, finish on a sled that they are more comfortable with and allows them to make, you know, a minor adjustment for what they think that sled might need, which then, you know, creates better racing in the end. If you have people in the middle of the pack or back of pack making adjustments to their sleds to make them faster, then they're, you know, wanting to then pass people.
So from, I guess from my perspective, I mean, like, when you think about, like, super lates or limited elites or whatever, when you're thinking of stock car, asphalt, you know, small town USA racing, they do those competition cautions. So if there isn't a red flag, you know, by the time they're halfway through or whatever it was, depending on the race, they would have a competition caution where they would, you know, completely, you know, reset the starting order, move back up and you know, have like that small break. Is that something you're thinking of, or are you just mandatory automatically 10, even if there was just a red flag before the lap before?
I think either way is good, as long as it they both do the same thing, whether it's the red flag or, you know, with the competition caution or the mandatory 10-lap thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the most important thing with that, though, is it kind of bunches the group back up, and it gives people a time to make an adjustment to these sleds that are extremely like adjustment finicky. They can, like, one adjustment can make the sled like a lot better,
mm-hmm.
or a lot worse. So it like kind of like it throws another screw in there, so a wrench in there. So it's kind of makes things a little bit more interesting. And I always thought it was cool, like, for the fans to kind of watch the teams.
I mean, I don't remember the last time WCs went straight through.
That's the first time I did 25 straight. So, that was new for me to do 25 straight laps like that. I know it has been done before. I know that.
I feel like after like the first 15, everyone's kind of just like, okay, what lap are we on?
You kind of lose track there.
Running. It's kind of like we're watching Mira.
Right. It is a different, it's kind of takes the endurance part of it into more of an account on that.
Definitely.
For sure. But on the other side of that, I think it takes away from the show part of the race, which is
excitement. Point of the race?
I think, yeah, right. So we wouldn't be racing if there were no fans, really. So I think from a fan perspective, I'm always kind of thinking about what can make the racing better. I think that was better. I'm not saying that was the answer. Maybe we can try something different. I don't know. Maybe we can make it even longer. Maybe make it 40 laps and make it a 10, 10, and then a 20. I don't know. but I just think, you know, in my opinion, I thought that was a little better. It also, plowing the corners during that stretch, that 10-minute stretch, did a lot for the racing, too.
Yeah.
Especially just because it seems like at the end of those last five of a 25-lapper or the last 5 or 10 of a 30 lapper, it seems like more of a management type of race than an actual like pursuing type of race, mm-hmm. like for like some of the competitors. So I that's just my opinions on what maybe something that could be changed back. I'm always trying to think of stuff that's just a little bit different. How can we make it better?
So then moving into 5x5, we're coming off that this past weekend. You want to talk about Saturday?
Yeah, not the best day. I thought like we did well in the qualifiers. We qualified first, and the sled just kind of, I didn't really mesh well with the sled. I felt like I just went a little too hard trying to get around Gady there, and the sled kind of just fell off with me towards the end of that race, and I just didn't get in a good rhythm there towards the end of that race. So it was something I looked back on and learned from for Sunday for sure, which Sunday went awesome, went perfectly.
So won every heat. Fourth on Saturday, won every heat on Sunday, and won the 15-lapper as well.
Yeah, Sunday was awesome. It was the fourth Wausau 525 championship, which I am extremely proud of. I can't be any more proud of that, to win there four times, to be that consistent at Wausau.
And four in a row, too. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. We're running. We're still rolling with it.
Yeah, and you have three in a row at Beaujolais and two at
Valcourt? I had three in a row at Beaujolais, yeah. I had Valcourt. I had two in a row. Yeah, but Gady won last year, so... Yeah, that's the streak I got going at Wausau. So I'm living on that for now, which is awesome. Cause I love going to Wausau. Wausau is, the track itself is a tricky track, and it doesn't, in my opinion, that probably doesn't make the best racing, but it does make for usually pretty close racing in the end.
Yep.
Just because it's a smaller track. And it's a different track. All these tracks can't be perfect. They all can't be the same. They all can't be, like, the most exciting tracks out there. So I appreciate that we get to race different types of tracks. But I love just racing at Wausau. The community is awesome. The people that show up there are awesome. We always have a bunch of fans there, personally, and especially more now since you're from Wausau, and all your family are like showing up rooting me on now, so it feels like I'm more of a becoming a hometown favorite.
Shout out to Grandma Judy. She was waiting for the phone call last night. She made it last year, but she has some knee problems, so she couldn't be there this weekend. She was a little disappointed. Yeah. But
being from Illinois,
we got her that call, and she was so excited.
Well, that's the thing. Like being from Illinois, I don't get to like race for like hometown. Like a hometown. I've never had that, so. I always felt like I was the outsider, especially, you know, the whole Wisconsin-Illinois fib, Wisconsin hate fibs.
I feel like you're up in Wisconsin more than you are in Illinois.
Well, yeah.
You're up in Boulder Junction.
But still, that doesn't keep me from being a fib to some people.
He needs, like, dual citizenship, because technically, I mean, there are some summers you're up in Boulder Junction way more than you are in Illinois, so.
I spend quite a few time in both states. Yeah, you're right. So, it's, yeah, I appreciate, you know, a lot of what that town and what that city and especially what Ralph has done for
Ralph, and I think the Heinrichs were out there. I feel Mark, like every night.
Mark and Brock, yep, those two guys are they are dedicated.
Their
for sure.
Bob, yep.
They definitely are the guys to
the ice was amazing.
Put on the race.
It looked fantastic.
Yeah, the conditions were. Honestly, I think if I could think about it, they were like perfect. The track didn't get very rough at all. When it did,
I think they said they had almost a foot of ice.
Yeah, which so it probably wasn't needed, but I mean, more the merrier, right? So, and I think just before the final, I think they pushed the cones out a little bit just to get rid of that little bit of a rough groove. And Wausau definitely has the room to do that. Some of these tracks don't really have that luxury to push cones out. Mm-hmm. But when you can do that and have like almost a fresh sheet of ice there for the final or for the last day of racing, it makes the racing that
track.
Much. It makes that much better racing.
And USSA, so
yeah, I think
kudos to that.
I think everything went well. Honestly, if I was looking at it from like, you know, what could have went better racing wise, I think everything went smoothly. There were not many big crashes or anything that was like super dramatic happening. I think the fans, there were a lot of fans there on Saturday. Sunday was a little bit of a slow day. The Packers lost, so everybody just wasted their time watching them. So,
which is so funny because for those of you who know, my uncle's the biggest Packer fan, like huge. Like,
he is a pretty big Packer fan.
Absolutely right? Crazy.
I'm surprised he likes me so much because of that.
He was, he was at the races on Sunday, and I'm like, whoa, are you watching it on your phone, or what are you doing here? Because
that's the thing, people in Wausau love racing, for sure. Maybe even more than the Packers.
I mean, I don't know.
They better now. They lost, so they're pretty much dead to you now.
Still a lot farther than the Bears, Connor. Still a lot farther.
Well, there's always next year.
So, Wausau facility, they're only allowed to host, what was it, 3 events per year? What did Ralph say? He was hopefully going to be able to propose to the city board or county board to get more flexibility with that, or, you know.
Just to get an increase on how many events they can have.
Yep.
And it seemed like he was pretty, I don't know if this is like super proprietary information. I hope it isn't. But it seemed like he was pretty hopeful that he was going to get some more events. He did tell me he had some pretty big events, especially in the AMA circle track motorcycle racing. He's been doing a couple of those regional races, and seemed like he could possibly get a bigger race, I think he was saying, like a national race. So to pair that with that facility and maybe get another race, a modern race or a vintage race weekend at Wausau to use the facility, it's like the facility just kind of sits there not being used, like for, it only gets used like twice a year, which is, you know, it's kind of sad to think like a place like that that is really like purpose built for oval racing, whether it's bikes or quads or whatever, it can't get used more than twice. So hopefully that goes in his favor, and hopefully we can race there more. I think getting racing there more is something that will only help our sport. You know, one more race on the series, I think we. If we have to go there twice, we did that 1 year. Yeah. Was it 2 years ago? I think we went there twice. That was all good. I thought it went well. So I think hopefully that goes.
And it definitely was a beautiful weekend. I feel like Wausau always gets the snow. Always gets the snow. And we got snow, but it was done by like 6, 7 a.m. So perfect amount of time to clear off the track. And, you know, it was a beautiful day. The sun was out both days. So standing on that hill right there was amazing. It felt awesome. You know, especially the sun being out and not being too warm where the ice is melting, but enough for fans to actually want to sit outside the whole time. So that was awesome. I think moving into our big discussion, I guess the overall like topic for this podcast was kind of going to be scheduling. We're kind of just going to address that aspect of it. I know we talked a lot about results in the 2 different races, which we had a lot to recap. So that was interesting. But as far as like the race day schedule, the time format, like how the races should be run the right way was kind of like the one thing that we wanted to like address. I feel like that's one thing that could be, you know, improved upon as far as that goes. I know, you know, Snowcross always says they're running their final, their pro final at 9:30, or they're running this at that time. Or, you know, the other events, you know, we're running this at this time, we're sticking to it. We're starting racing at 8:30. We're not going to switch it to 9:30 and then push it back to 11. You know, you're going to stick to a time because that was the advertised time. And I feel like that kind of like draws away from fans if they're like, get there and racing isn't started. They're like, why did I come this early then? Why did I get up this early then? That sort of thing. So, Gunner, you know, how do you want to talk about that, or class restructure? What you thinking?
I think the whole race schedule / format, if it can be run on a time format, I think it would really help, especially if we do introduce live streaming back into the race day. So it kind of allows fans to then tune in and accurately know when to watch what classes they want to watch. If you know, we are going to try and have live streaming again, which I think we should, because I think it definitely helps with the overall exposure of our sport. But if even beside that, I think just having things run more of on a time schedule. I know it's hard. The hardest thing about this, doing it on a time format, is the you know, red flags, which is stops racing, even sometimes starts it over if you haven't done a whole lap, and that can push you back like 5 or more or 10 minutes, even more if it happens multiple times. So taking that into account is going to be hard, but I don't think it's impossible. Like, I don't think it's impossible to try and run races on a schedule, especially if you put in a little bit of a buffer time in there.
2 minutes for each race. I mean, not each race is going to have a red flag.
Right. So if like one does and that one may run a little bit behind, you can then make that up with the next two that, you know, that then you can then make get back on schedule. I think just trying, I think the key word is trying to stick to a schedule is important, even if you don't. It seems like a lot of the time, there is a lot of downtime. I'm not talking about just the plows, but in between the plows, there was a lot of
non-activity
happening on the track.
The plows got off the track and it was like, okay, where are the sleds? Get them out of the out on the track.
And I know things have to like get back going with the officials and the corner workers and stuff like that. And I'm not trying to say like they have to be rushed, but if we can condense this show, which it should be a show, like it's a race day, but it should be a show also, like condense it into something that's watchable, not like having to like stand around for hours.
Twiddling your thumbs.
Well, like, you only stand around for so long. That's why a lot of these, like all major sport events are like right around the 3 hour mark, right?
Yep.
They're all like the same time frame because that's how long people can stand, have attention for. Otherwise, they get bored or just want to leave, you know, tired or whatever. So, I mean, I've kind of proposed quickly here what I thought is something different, something might be, can be used, like, you know, this isn't like a final thing, but it could be definitely worked on. And this is eliminating some classes. I think that is needed. I think there are a few too many classes that are probably can... I it's hard for me to say that because, I mean, it's easy for me to say that because I don't race these classes. And, you know, people do race these classes, like the Sportsman 600 class or the Junior F500 class or something like that. But if we can get over that initial hump of, like,
having
just...
500 classes.
Yeah, we're just getting rid of, like, those classes that people are racing and, like...
Condense them.
Yeah, I think it will be beneficial in the end.
Or have, you know, only certain classes between that 3 hour mark. Which then, I mean, also opens another can of worms, I guess, too, so...
Right. So what I kind of propose here is these are the classes that are like the main classes I see at the show, at the race. Like these are what the fans probably want to see, and it makes most sense for me. So you have your Pro Champ, right? That's what we're racing now. Then you have Pro Light. I think that's needed because it's a stepping stone into Pro Champ. I think you do need the Pro Light class.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to throw a 16-year-old kid on a pro. You know, right. The big guys.
To make the jump from what I see, well, I guess I kind of see the whole thing going from, if I was a kid, I'd see the kid racing like junior stock, right? A 380 or a 440 stock sled, and then progressing into a sprint chassis sled, 440, 500, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
and then progressing into F500, and then from F500 in the Pro Light, and then Pro Light in the Pro Champ.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like a lot of people do, you know, if they are in that Junior 2 class,
Well, why is it called Junior 2? Why is there a Junior 1 and a Junior 2?
Because that's their age.
Well, it's condense them. Like, junior stock can be a lower age, and then junior sprint can be a higher age.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely.
I don't see the point
of
junior one and junior two both being sprint chassis, one being a lower age and one being a higher age. To me, it just, I get that, like, you don't want get different ages racing against each other, but if you can force kids to just race, like, the lower kids race stock and the higher and the older kids race sprint chassis, it helps with the show. And I don't think it takes away anything from them.
And the transition too,
right?
I feel like if you look at, I feel like I'm always comparing to snowcross, but like, how many classes are there? You know, there's just like six.
For them, it's a little bit different because snowcross sleds are all the same.
Yeah, I know that. I understand that, but
so, I mean, with those classes I just named, I thought were the main classes, and then obviously the new F3 class, which I would get rid of F3 and I would call it Pro Stock, and then the other class, Outlaw 600, what I think that's a crowd favorite. I think that's,
so this may be a stupid question, but why do they call it F3?
Formula 3. That's what the class was
before, right?
Was called before. There was F1 and F Formula 3, I think is what they called it. And the Formula 3 was, the more of a stock chassis versus the Formula 1 chassis, the twin trackers. So,
yeah. So it was just kind of because that's what it was, originally back then.
It's kind of like a throwback to the old days, because we're now racing stock chassis again. But a lot of these people don't
understand
know that.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't much make sense to a lot of people why it's called that, other than people that, were around then and people that know a history about the sport. For me, it just makes more sense. Name it Pro Stock. That's what it is. It's professional stock.
Totally get that.
So I kind of see that being those being the main classes, and then everybody gets two heats or two rounds, I guess. Two rounds of every class. So two rounds of Pro Champ, no third round, two rounds of Pro Light, two rounds of F3, two rounds of F500, two rounds of Junior Run Sprint, or Junior Sprint, two rounds of Junior Stock, and then two rounds of Outlaw 600. And if you run all of those on a 15-minute schedule, 15 minutes for each class, say you start at 9 o'clock, and you give yourself 15 minutes for each race, for all those classes, including a plow halfway through, that takes 2 hours. You do that two times, that's 4 hours. And then, I guess we're running on like a 5-hour schedule, if that's, a full day of racing. So say you start at 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3. I guess you're done by 2:30. It'd be the same amount of time.
Which then, it also opens up that other, whole idea of, why are we starting at 9 a.m.?
Right.
I know personally, that a lot of my friends, when they come to the races, they don't want to be there until noon. And then the other thing, too, you have to look at it from, a vendor/venue standpoint. They're not going to sell beer at 10:30 in the morning. People aren't going to start buying, food and that sort of thing until later in the day. So, the other thing is, too, you could also push that back to, say, 11 a.m., get down around 4:35. You also have to think about, dark as well. But
I think you need the time in the morning to run the qualifiers. I think people still show up. I see fans show up earlier in the day. Even, most of them don't show up until the final. I think that's pretty normal with other sports, but I think it can be condensed a little bit just to make it a little bit shorter and make the days not seem as long. It seems like we're getting there really early in the morning. Like if we get practice starts at 8, we have to get there at 7, we have to do adjustments, we have to do setups, and it seems like it's we're not there, we're getting out of there right before dark or right after dark. Especially on a Saturday, the days are long for sure. So, I think this whole topic of of getting the schedule more condensed, less classes, better progression through the classes is extremely important to put on a better show. And I think that this is just one part of the show. Like, this is not like gonna, this is not gonna make things a lot better, but I think this is an important part of it for sure. So yeah, if you guys have any ideas or opinions, definitely comment on the socials on this post, or send me a message and I'll share them. I'm open to anything. I just want to see something. I think we can try different.
Then moving into like up and coming races, I mean, I believe it's this weekend, the Minnesota Central Pond Racing in Butterfield. I think they have 10 pro lights or pro champ sleds. They're going to have $1,000 purse for the winner. Mirror Race is also racing this weekend, Gaylord, Michigan. And then the next race that we're going to be at is going to be the World Series. So that is at Eagle River again. They call it the World Series. And that is the 20th and the 21st of February. And that's also the same weekend as the Snowdio. So the Manawa Snowdio is the same weekend as the World Series, which is a little strange. But they're running vintage. I believe they're running F500, possibly Sportsman 600. And then they're for sure running, the Pro Champ / Pro Light class. So
yeah, it's kind of a bummer that those are the same weekend. The Manawa Snowdio is a lake race, which I try to stay away from. But
if it would have been a different weekend, who knows?
I don't totally rule them out. I mean, if the money's there, for sure. Like, let's go. But I want to get back to Eagle River. I want to get back there. I got some work to do there. So for sure, I'm excited to get back there. Excited to get working on the sleds. This next month, we have like a month, a little bit less than a month until we go back there. So it gives us a lot of time to start working on stuff in the garage. So I'm excited to get back there and get back to work. So it's kind of strange not having this much time to just sit down and kind of digest 2 weekends of racing. Usually we're like go the whole season.
Like this, when you can.
Just getting ready and a lot of traveling, and travel time kind of restricts your ability to kind of just to digest and kind of think about things, what you can change. And I'm excited to get back working on things in the garage here and get some different for Eagle River, and hopefully come away with a win there. That'd be pretty big if we could definitely win there in a couple weeks. So we're almost positive that's going to happen, right? I mean, that's as far as I know.
Yeah, it's still on their website, so we'll see what happens between them and USSA, if that's going to be a sanctioned race or what.
I think that depends on ice conditions again, but I did hear that they stripped her down to the dirt and then started the rebuild, so that's good. Hopefully that's true.
They got a couple weeks, so they should be able to if they're doing it.
It's a little warm down here in Illinois, but we'll see. Time will tell for sure. So that's, Episode 3 in the books. Definitely comment on the our social pages. Tell us what you think. Tell us any opinions. Tell us what you guys want us to hear talk about next.
Like, subscribe, share. I think that's what they say.
I don't know. Is that what they say?
I don't know. I don't really watch YouTube.
We have some subscribers on Spotify. I looked it up. We have
and on Apple Podcasts.
We have like almost 40 subscribers, I think, on Spotify, which is pretty cool for being 3 episodes in.
Yeah, so. And I think if you subscribe, you get a notification every single time we make a new podcast, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that is true. So we'll check you next time on Ice Warrior Podcast.
Bye. Peace.